Hello, hola, welcome to the Elastico podcast. We're back once more. I'm Christopher Atkins and I'm joined by my co-host, Rio Coimbra of theelastico.com. Hello, Rio.
Hello, Chris. How was it?
I'm good, and we've got a title to celebrate this week, Rio. We finally have the champion of the Brasileirão 2012, Fluminense. It's a thrilling way to clinch it in the final 2 minutes, but I guess the long wait for the inevitable is now over.
It is, and you know, we've been following this title fight that Fluminense has had for quite a while now. But the reality is that in the past few weeks, for you know a good 10 rounds now, I think it's become pretty clear that this was going to be Fluminense's title, and it certainly was an exciting way to do it. You know, they did it with 3 rounds to spare, but it was quite a thrilling game against relegation contenders Palmeiras, who had a lot to play for, and Palmeiras is practically relegated at this point, very, very small chance of survival. But really, the story is certainly Fluminense and this amazing side. And you know, Chris, you and I talked about them in the beginning of the season. I'll refer back to me picking them as title favorites when the season started. Back then, I talked about the depth of the squad and how they were bringing in good form from the previous season. And they certainly proved it during the course of the year and looked unbeatable at times, and even when they played poorly, they still managed to get the 3 points a lot of times. And one thing I'll say that to me is quite astounding and something you rarely see in Brazil. This Fluminense side only had 3 defeats all season. They scored the most goals out of any team, and they conceded the least goals out of any team. They had the top scorer of the league in Fred. Now, granted, 3 rounds to go, some of this could still change, but what matters is that at the moment they won the title, I think. And not only that, they managed 76 points, which is quite a lot for Brazil in what is usually a very tightly contested tournament. If you look back at the past few years, usually 62, 63, 64 points would have been enough to win the title. This year, with 3 rounds to spare, the top 3 teams all had above that points total, and Fluminense with a 10-point gap between them and Grêmio, who were in second place. So really a phenomenal season for the team. Abel Braga deserves a lot of credit. The players deserve a lot of credit, and it's quite a good squad that they have, and certainly Fluminense fans should be overjoyed at the moment.
Well, just to explain to anyone who hasn't seen the results, so as you said, Palmeiras hosted Fluminense, not in their regular stadium this week. It was played elsewhere, just to add to the kind of complications that surround these things. James touched upon it last week. Fluminense shot into a 2-0 lead just after halftime. But then halfway through the second half, Palmeiras leveled things up, 2 goals in quick succession from Barcos and the interestingly named Patrick Vieira. Before the last couple of minutes, that man Fred got his second of the game, virtually assured him of the top scorer crown unless Luis Fabiano has a great run into the end of the season. And Fluminense clinched the title, much to the disappointment of the already very annoyed Palmeiras fans. It was a very strange scene at the end, which, interestingly, Rio, it's a very apt, I guess, description of the modern world. I actually saw this game via highlights sitting on the Hong Kong subway coming into the city. They were playing it on the screens on the side of the carriage.
Well, I think that's a testament to how much the Brazilian league has grown in the past few years. And, you know, Chris, you and I have talked a lot about the growing stature of the league, the money coming in, and Brazil's ability right now to hold on to young players longer than they have been able to for much of the recent past, and also the ability to bring back some players. And if you look at this Fluminense squad, you know, in all honesty, I think this is a team, granted they couldn't challenge the Champions League, but I think they give a lot of Europa League sides a run for their money. We're talking about the likes of Deco, of Thiago Neves, of Fred, youngster Wellington Nain, that's attracting a lot of attention from Europe. Diego Cavalieri in goal, who was the backup keeper at Liverpool and had an astounding season. So this is a squad chock full of talent. And many European teams would be very happy to have some of these players. And granted, this is the pick of the bunch from the Brasileiro this year. But it does goes to show just the rising status of the Brasileiro, of these squads, and certainly it makes me happy that all the way over there in China and in Hong Kong, you were able to catch some of the news around it.
Rio, we've spoken a lot this year then about Fluminense. We normally stick to the players you just mentioned, the Fredis, the Rafael Sobis, Wellington Nems, Thiago Neves, the big names of their squad. But at the same time, there have been some, I guess, unsung heroes. You've got the likes of Kum at centre-back. He made a very notable error last week against Sao Paulo, but all it did was bring out a lot of praise for his performances this year, with several people suggesting that he's actually been the best centre-back in the Brasileirão this season.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I'm not sure I would quite go as far as saying he's up there. I think players like Hever and Leonardo Silva at Atlético Mineiro have both been probably better. I've always been a big fan of Chicão at Corinthians, and I think Gilberto Silva has spoken before about the fantastic season he's had at Grêmio. But certainly Gun is an important player for Fluminense, and although I think he lacks a little bit of pace sometimes, and he's certainly capable of the odd mistake, he is a leader out there, and he's a very calm and confident player, and you can just tell that it takes a lot to phase him. And as you mentioned, even in that São Paulo game where he was responsible for a bad mistake, immediately afterwards you could just tell that, you know, he sort of had his mind back in it, and he wasn't going to allow another mistake to happen. So he's been very important for their team. And certainly, you know, you're right, there have been other players that have been important for this club. Fullback Bruno Vieira has been important. I think Wagner has been important for them during times of the season when the likes of Thiago Neves wasn't quite on form, and when Deco was out injured, Wagner played an important role at times. Rafael Sobis didn't have nearly as good of a season as he had last year, but he had a couple of important games. Marco Junior, the young kid coming off the bench, and even Wallace, the fullback, who is Chelsea bound soon, and only played a handful of games, but he looked promising going forward. And of course, there's always a midfielder Jean, who is underappreciated and often not mentioned by fans, but he's played an important role as well.
No, absolutely, and there's a few of those players in this side who may never move to the European game, or they may never really receive the adulation or the prizes that others in Brazil may receive, but they're very much respected for what they can do in this division, and they're very much regarded in maybe the second tier of players, the players who win titles but maybe don't win the individual prizes. And I think Gion, Edinho, Kum, Leandro, Xavier, they're all in that category.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's always nice to take moments like these to give credit to the full squad, because you're right, you know, certain players grab all the headlines. It's usually, you know, the strikers and attack-minded players like Fred and Wellington Ney and Thiago Neves that grab the attention. But, you know, we've spoken before about the resiliency of this team, And also, you know, Abel Braga, the manager, deserves a lot of credit here. I was reading some interviews that he had after he won the title, and he was sort of very frank and honest and open in some of these interviews, and he spoke about not only the challenge involved in being champion in Brazil, and it's a very, very tough championship, and granted the caliber of teams isn't as high as some European leagues, but the competition and just the sort of cutthroat nature of it is really difficult to see anywhere else. You know, Brazil has this famous saying that at the beginning of every season, there's 10 different teams that could win the title, and that's not an exaggeration. That's very true. And maybe the gaps are widening a little bit more these past few years because of money streaming into some clubs a little bit more than others, and some teams just frankly being better managed than others. But the reality is that it is a very tough competition. And for Fluminense, like I said before, to have one with such a gap this year, that's almost sort of unheard of in Brazil. So I think it's a testament to Abel Braga's side and just in general the staff at Fluminense for finding the funding and being very sensible about putting this squad together.
And Abel Braga Rio, of course, is one of the few managers in Brazil, along with the likes of Wanderlei Luxemburgo, who has experience in Europe. He played in France, and then, of course, I think he managed Marseille for a bit.
He did, yeah, and he in one of these interviews that I mentioned, he spoke about his time in France, and he said, that these days it's, back then when he was playing in France, he played for Paris Saint-Germain for quite a few years. He was saying that, if you played against a side in France that had seven or eight players that played international football, that was amazing and almost unheard of at the time. But nowadays, the top European teams of the world, they have over 20 players that play in national teams. A lot of the bench for clubs like Barcelona and Chelsea are national team players, which he frankly admitted, you don't see any, you can't see that in Brazil, and that speaks to the gap that there exists between Brazil and the rest of the world at the moment. But with that said, again, he talked about just the nature of the competition in Brazil and how a lot of the talent is much more spread out in a lot of historic clubs in Brazil, whereas it's so concentrated these days in European football. So at the end of the day, it makes for not only a more challenging tournament, but in a lot of ways, and arguably a more entertaining tournament.
We'll move on to Europe on that neat little link you've given us there, Rio. It's been an interesting week in the Champions League once more, and as ever, Brazilian players have been quite prominent. Whether it be Pepe scoring for Real Madrid as they drew 2-2 with Dortmund, Alan scored another goal against Manchester United. They're going to be glad to see the back of him. Or Alexander Pato scoring his first goal of the season for Milan against Malaga. But we might come back to Pato particularly in a bit. But there was one game in particular that stood out for Brazilian contribution this week. Three goals courtesy of Brazil, and many more players actually on the pitch from Brazil, and that was Chelsea against Shakhtar Donetsk. We spoke about it 2 weeks ago with a particular focus on Shakhtar, but Chelsea maybe against the run of play got their revenge this time around with a 90th minute winner at home. So you're a happy man this week, Rio.
Yeah, I certainly am, but I think it was the type of game that any fan of the sport would have thoroughly enjoyed, because on the field were two sides who wanted to attack, who wanted to score goals. Neither was intimidated by the other, and at the end of the day, that's always good for any fan of the sport. When you have such technical players that are dynamic and switch positions with each other, very possession-focused game, passing on the ground, very quick. Rarely did you see sort of long ball attempts, and when you did, they were sort of expertly picked out, and only when one team sort of got a bit too comfortable getting forward and attacking, so they were very clever when you did see them. So overall, like I said, it was just a joy to watch. I think Shakhtar were the better team in the first half. They really came on strong and wanted to score a goal right away. I think in the second half, Chelsea came about more strongly and dominated possession, and I think at the end, probably deserved the win, although you could argue it would have been more of a fair result as a draw. But what can you say about, well, for starters, that Oscar goal was just something amazing. You could watch that over and over again, and you won't get tired of it. But even besides that, you know, Willian, who was himself a Chelsea target over the summer and last January, had a great game himself, and then showed his cool and very relaxed nature by finishing, kind of both similar sort of chances where somebody in this team cut the ball back to him sort of in the middle or in the top of the box, and he just slided it home. A lot of times you see players just blasting that ball over the net. They get a little too excited. They feel the rush of defenders around them, but Willian just showed his composure. So, like I said, you know, I think it was just a lot of fun to watch. Even beyond the goals, there were just so many opportunities on both sides. And just the technical quality of the game was something that's rare to see these days, so much of it on the field by so many players.
And seven Brazilians started the match in Rio, and then Ilsinho came on as a substitute. We also had Eduardo da Silva and Douglas Costa. They didn't make it onto the pitch, so there was a fair number of Brazilians involved overall. And Chelsea, then, a recent talking point for them once again has been the form of David Luiz. As a Chelsea fan, Rio, what do you make of that, particularly now, I guess, with the injury absence of John Terry, who looks like he's going to be out for a fair number of weeks?
Yeah, certainly it's tough for Chelsea to lose Terry for an extended period of time. In terms of David Luiz, you know, I'm not sure there's really anything that new here. I think it sort of goes back to what we discussed last year about him, which is he's inconsistent. I think he has all the natural talent in the world to be a world-class defender. He has games where he's world-class, and Chelsea has been very happy to have him. At the same time, he does have these occasional games and sometimes run of games where, you know, the mental side of his game, he just seems a bit too relaxed at times. You know, he plays the ball around at the back when it seems like he shouldn't be taking such risks. Sometimes he just rushes into challenges, and he's a little bit clumsy when he's defending one-on-one at times. So you see these moments from him where, like I said, it's not really an athleticism or an ability question. It's more of the mental side of his game. Is he concentrating enough? Does he have sort of the right sort of level of focus and the right level of aggressiveness in his game? And that seems to go lacking at times. I think we've seen this all before from David Luiz, and it's a matter at this point of him being consistent and getting that part of his game down. He has been consistent for stretches of games, and he just needs to make sure that he keeps it up. And certainly I'm sure he'll be working on that, and we just have to see if he can improve on that. It's tough to predict whether or not it'll happen. Some players can do it, some cannot, and we'll just need to see.
I mentioned briefly then, Rio, Alexander Pato scoring for Milan, his first goal of a very injury hit campaign, and that's becoming all too familiar a turn of phrase when it comes to Pato. He has suffered a lot with injuries in his time at Milan, particularly in the last 2 years. When you look at it from a Brazil point of view, they've got a friendly with Colombia this week. I think Mano Menezes, as much as he does have Leandro Damião, doesn't really trust him in these big games yet, which might be why we are seeing him experiment without a striker. For Brazil, it would be lovely if they could call upon the player that Pato threatens, and definitely when he was younger, everyone thought he would be.
Yeah, certainly. And you know, Pato is still young at 23, and his goal scoring record for Milan is pretty damn impressive. I think it's, I'm looking it up here, 62 goals in 117 appearances, which isn't too bad for a player that has a lot of substitute appearances. So when he's in form and when he's not injured, he can score. We've all seen that from him. So I think some people argue that his game at times is a little bit too selfish. But at the same time, you know, strikers a lot of times are criticized of that and by nature need to have a little bit of selfishness. But really, as you pointed out, the big question mark over Pato is his fitness level. And he's pretty much had a serious injury practically every season, it seems, that he's been at Milan. You know, I think last season he played less than 20 games. This year he's only managed 5 appearances with that single goal. And in a lot of ways, this was supposed to be his year, with Ibrahimovic being sold to PSG. Pato is really the sort of natural striker of the team. And like I said, it's supposed to be his season. He's only coming back now from injury, and will certainly have been disappointed not to have been playing thus far. And hopefully he can stay fit and he can carry on for the rest of the season and hopefully have a good season. If he doesn't, if he suffers more injuries this year and he gets sidelined, I don't see Milan sticking around with him in terms of continue to give him the faith to be their top striker. You know, at that point, you can't really blame them if he has so many injuries season after season. It starts being a question about his particular body and physique. So you know, hopefully we all have our fingers crossed, and as you said, it will be interesting to see if he is fit. What role he has to play for Brazil. Mano has always liked Pato and called upon him when he has been fit. He, at the time, was ahead of Damião in the pecking order, but Damião has had a good run of games for Brazil. He did very well in the Olympics and proved himself there. So it'll be an interesting battle when it does arrive.
Here's what Mano had to say about Pato then, Rio. He said, in my Brazil, Pato has played very little despite this. However, he's the second top goal scorer in the team, which means his quality is extraordinary. I'm looking forward to his return on the field. In my opinion, his constant physical problems are not due to solely bad luck. He's been looked at by the medical staff, but there's no structural abnormality. So he's not a player that is destined to be injured. We need to understand why there are so many accidents. I think he's fairly... fair in that appraisal, and I think that's what everyone else is seeing of Pato, that like, if he is fit, he's definitely got a role to play in this side.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think in a lot of ways his game style links up well with this Brazil style. I think Damião is a very different type of player and offers something completely different. Damião is a bigger guy, stronger guy, certainly has a lot of technical ability, but more apt to hold the ball and you know, can be effective with his back to goal and can be that sort of target man that you look for in the box to cross the ball into. Whereas Pato is a much quicker player, good feet, good passing skills, can dribble and be effective outside of the box and cutting inside the box. So he can play sort of a more fluid game with up front with players like Neymar and Hulk and Lucas and whoever Mano decides to play. So he does offer something very different for Brazil, which I'm sure is something that Mano wants. And I don't think there's many other players right now of Pato's quality, of his level of skill, that have that sort of ability for Brazil. In some ways, you can argue that Jonas used to be that type of player, but nowadays he certainly lacks the pace that he once did. And Neymar, I think, has been a bit of a forgotten child for Brazil. So there's no real direct competitor for Pato's style of play right now. Whereas for, you know, a player like Damião, you have players like Fregi and even Luis Fabiano, who are all still playing at a high level, but are much more similar in style. So like I said, Pato offers something different. I think Mano likes that, but he's being very pragmatic with his assessment of his injuries.
We'll take a short break now, and we'll be back in a second where we'll be joined by Samindra Kunti, who's a journalist based in a Belgian journalist now based in Brazil. So we'll see you in a second. And so for the second part of today's show, me and Rio are joined by Sam Quinty, who's actually based in Rio de Janeiro at the moment. Sam's originally from Belgium. Hello, Sam.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. And how long have you been in Brazil now?
I arrived on October 4th, so I've been here in Rio for a good month. Settling down has not been so easy as Brazil is a rather bureaucratic country, but overall, so far, it's been a good experience, and I have managed to go and see quite a number of games here of the Brazilian domestic league. So it's been an interesting few weeks, and actually, we also have a few interesting events here in Rio coming up. There is a debriefing on the Rio and London Olympic Games coming up later this week. Next week, there is the SoccerX Global Convention here in Rio. And to cap that all off, at the start of December, Carlos Alberto Parreira is organizing a conference of coaches here in Rio called Futecon. So all in all, interesting times coming up.
It sounds like you've got a busy schedule. For those that don't know, Sam originally covered a lot of Brazil's games around Europe. I met him at Craven Cottage when Brazil took on Ghana last year. So, Sam, in terms of, you said you've seen a lot of games already in your time in Brazil. What's your reaction to the atmosphere at the stadiums? How different is it to going to matches in Europe?
It is definitely a rather different experience, as I'm sure Rio will agree as well. It's completely different, and the biggest shock has actually come off the pitch, not on the pitch. In this globalized world, we can all watch the Brasileirão on TV or online via live streaming, but the biggest shock is really off the pitch. It's the fans and it's the infrastructure. And it started straight away, actually, when I arrived here at the international airport called Carlos Tom Jobim, which is in the north zone of Rio de Janeiro, a good 15 kilometers outside of the city center. And straight away, you got this feeling that Brazil doesn't have the infrastructure to host major events, to host major football games, for example. And then you go to São Januário, which is also in the north zone, and the Engenhão, also in the north zone, which will function as the Olympic Stadium in 2016. And you just wonder how Brazil will cope with it, because simply the infrastructure isn't up to it. For example, São Januário is very difficult to get to. From the city center to the Engenhão, for example, it takes nearly 2 hours to get there. And the neighborhoods surrounding the stadium are a problem as well. São Januário actually is a very dangerous place to go to, because behind the stadium there is a favela which has not been pacified by the army and the police. And a colleague of ours, Tim Vickery, he was assaulted there once at gunpoint, just to illustrate my point. So the access to the stadiums is very difficult, which doesn't make it a nice experience to just go to the stadium. And once you enter the stadiums, as I'm sure everyone knows, the crowds are so small and the fans turn so easily on their own teams that it's really shocking. Yes, in Europe, we may boo our own team from time to time, but here it's just the norm. It's just standard practice to boo your own team and your own players. So it's quite a shocking experience. And just one example of that was Alexander yesterday at the Vasco da Gama game. He's Vasco's top scorer, I believe, with 9 goals this season. But when he came onto the pitch, Alexander, when his name was announced to the speakers, he was simply booed. And then obviously he scored Vasco's goal against Atletico yesterday, and the fans started cheering him again. But today I read a comment in the newspaper that he simply wasn't pleased with the reception he got by his own fans. And to be fair, I totally agree with him. So overall, the biggest shock has really come off the pitch and not really on the pitch.
Yeah, I think, Sam, you make some very interesting points there. I think on terms of the infrastructure, as a Brazilian, I completely agree with you, and I think having that reaction, it justifies a lot of what FIFA has been saying to the CBF and to Brazil in general, that they really need to get their act together and invest in infrastructure. Now, of course, in Rio, Maracanã is undergoing construction, and some of the other stadiums won't be used for the World Cup. But with that said, public transportation and the airport and certainly safety are all areas that need a lot of attention and really haven't gotten them.
Yes, to a certain point, I agree with you. Safety, infrastructure, transport definitely need more attention here in Brazil. But remember, it's a World Cup and it's an Olympic Games in 2016. So fans who come over here, invest a lot of money, spend a lot of money, may have saved a lot of money to make the trip. So they will make sure that they will get, whatever way, they will manage to get to the stadium. It's just sad that the organization of those two events is not taking into account the needs of Brazilian society, because this could have been the biggest game, I think, for Brazilians themselves to have a better urban infrastructure. But it's not happening. And obviously, with all the delays in organization, the burden for the Brazilian taxpayer is only getting bigger. So I think, yes, to a certain point, I agree with you there. But partially, you should also take into account that fans from all over the globe will make sure that they get to the venues, or whatever means necessary.
Sam, moving on, we discussed in the first part of the show, me and Rio, that Fluminense won the Brasileirão title this weekend. What's been the reaction in Rio de Janeiro to that success?
Oh, when coming back from the Vasco da Gama game, I saw quite a number of Fluminense fans on the metro and in the streets here in Rio. So there has been a big celebration in Laranjeiras, which is the headquarters of the Fluminense team, which is not too far from where I'm living right now. And as you can imagine, the party went on deep into tonight. I think most Fluminense fans were very happy that their team finally sealed the title. The title obviously had a long way been coming. So I think for most fans, it was a big relief, and obviously in the dramatic way that it happened was obviously a big relief. And I think overall, the general consensus here among the media, among rival fans and rival clubs, has been that Fluminense really deserved this title. And today, obviously, all newspapers dedicated quite a lot of number of pages of their sports section to the victorious campaign of Fluminense. As you look upon the numbers, the facts, Fluminense boasts the best attack, the best defense, the highest number of victories, the top scorer in their ranks. So the numbers are really there and to back up Fluminense's title. And I feel that in the recent times, they have not always played their best football, and I hope you agree. But results have gone their way, and that's what champions do, grind out results when needed to. Their big players have stepped up, at key moments. And so overall, the consensus here in Rio is that Fluminense are worthy champions. So I would say, well done, Fluminense.
And Sam, so this weekend you went to two games. You went to Botafogo against Portuguesa and Vasco against Atlético Mineiro. Obviously, Atlético had the disappointment of no longer being able to win the title. So we'll start with that game. You mentioned Alexandro got booed by his own fans. He then scored a goal to turn their kind of support around. But what did you make of the two sides? Do you think Atlético have overperformed this season, or were you impressed with what you saw from them?
Well, the first games I saw here from Vasco da Gama were absolutely horrible for their part. The first game I saw here was Vasco Sao Paulo at São Januário, and Sao Paulo won very convincingly by 2-0. And after that, Vasco lost a number of games. They've now not won 6 games consecutively. But with the new interim coach, I must say their performance yesterday was rather organized and disciplined, which is an improvement compared to previous games where their man marking and their defending and passing in particular were very erratic. So I think for Vasco, I saw improvement yesterday, although I must add it was only a small improvement, but it was a well-organized and disciplined performance from the team from São Januário. And overall, I think the 1-0 scoreline reflected a fair result. Whatever comments you have about the referee, as to Atlético Mineiro, I don't think they've overperformed. I think they've been, obviously, as the ranking tells, one of the better sides in the competition. And there were a few nice moments. Ronaldinho hitting the near post from a corner kick. And the young lad, Bernard, he really impressed me. And he's obviously a player many of us are looking forward to see how he will progress next season, whether the setup at Atlético Mineiro will still be very helpful for him to develop his game. So Bernard is a very interesting player, and for my part, I really hope that Atletico ensure that he can develop into a very fine player, and I think he has all the potential to do that.
I think you're absolutely right there, Sam, and certainly a lot of the readers of the Elastical and listeners of this podcast are very excited about Bernat and are following his progress closely as he starts breaking into the national team. And speaking about the national team, I think that's a good segue for us to sort of go into the wrap-up over here. But, Sam, you've written for us on the Elastical about the Brazil national team and Mano Menezes' squad. And with the friendly against Colombia coming up, what's your general take at the moment of the Brazil squad and Mano Menezes' tenure so far?
My general take on affairs at the CBF, well, it's quite mixed. As a person, I like Mano Menezes. As a coach, I'm not too sure. Obviously, he has come a long way since his appointment back in August 2010, it was, I think. He has come a long way because Brazil have been in this transition phase, and I've repeated that a number of times, I think, in my articles at the Elastical. It's a transition phase. And as Mano Menezes said, there are three stages to this transition. The Copa America, the Olympics, which we now have had, and next, finally, the Copa das Confederações, the Confederations Cup. And as we are approaching the Confederations Cup, I think Mano is finally starting to really get a good view on what his first 11 would, who he will start at his first 11. So I think Mano is getting there slowly. Obviously, there are a number of problems. Left back is one. Who will he play in the holding hole? Ramiro know, probably on Wednesday against Colombia up front as well. How will he protect the left back position at the Olympics? He made the tactical error of wanting to protect the left back with another left back in front. So that was a technical error, and obviously Menezes paid a very high price for it. So team selection is obviously very important. Another part of it is the CBF. It has to change at some point. It's really astounding. Brazil have come to this point where they can't really control who their adversaries will be in friendly internationals. They ditched their contract with Cantaro, who used to be in charge of Brazil friendlies, and have now joined forces with a company from Saudi Arabia called International Sports Events. And one of the contract clauses is that the Arabian company basically decide who Brazil will play in friendlies. And since Brazil have only got friendlies left and the Confederations Cup, which we all agree is basically a sort of glorified friendlies, since friendlies are all Brazil has got left, they are so important, and it's just staggering that Brazil can't decide their own adversaries. So 2 points. I think Mano has come a fair way. Obviously, I want to see against Colombia that Brazil can really dictate the play against a quality opponent. And second point, the setup at the CBF sometime soon, although it won't happen, obviously, sometime soon should change.
I think we're all agreed on that, Sam. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show this week. Thanks very much for coming on.
My pleasure.
And hopefully we'll have you on sometime in the future again.
Thank you.
So it's that time of the week again. It's Only in Brazil news feature time. And I'll warn you now, put your earplugs in if you're not willing to listen to Rio talk about Flamengo once more, because it is, unfortunately, Flamengo who once more have provided us with our bizarre news story of the week. Rio, this time it's Ronaldinho. He's not necessarily the most popular man at Flamengo. He's currently suing them for 51 million reais of unpaid wages, which for fans in the UK is about 16, 17 million pounds, or maybe 21, 22 million euros. With all that going on in the background then, Rio, it must be a little bit of a surprise to you that they've inducted Ronaldinho into their walkway of fame in the last few days.
Yeah, certainly a bizarre event. And, you know, the announcement of this whole thing, and for anybody that's familiar with, you know, the in Los Angeles, the sort of movie star sidewalks with all the handprints of famous actors through the generations. Similar sort of idea happening at Flamengo, where at Da Gávea, you know, Flamengo's headquarters in Rio de Janeiro, they've inaugurated a similar premise with, I think, over 300 athletes overall inducted into this sidewalk. About 200, 250 of which are football players. Let's not forget that Flamengo, you know, have teams and you know, the Olympic squads and sort of other modalities and other sports and gymnastics and whatnot. But certainly the football players are the big attention. But you're absolutely right. The bizarre addition to the list was Ronaldinho's name. Who, you know, played for about a year for the team, won one title, the state championship, which is not that big of a title or not that important of a title, and certainly left in very dire and negative circumstances. And at this point, a lot of Flamengo fans are still quite upset at him. And yet there he is on the list of the greatest players to have ever donned a Flamengo jersey. which is quite bizarre. And he's next to names like Bebeto and Petkovic and Romário, Adílio, Zico, you know, great names that have played for Flamengo over the years. And, you know, obviously the only reason Ronaldinho was added is because he is a worldwide famous name. And it's good overall, I guess, brand for the club. But really, obviously, only names for players that have made history with the jersey of the club should be on that list, and not just big names in general. So another one of these bizarre moments that, as we've appropriately named the section, that you probably only see in Brazil.
And in case any of the non-Brazilian listeners didn't quite understand that, Petkovic is Dario Petkovic, as it's known in English.
Yeah, very, very famous player for Flamengo. One of the most famous exports, you could say, or not exports, I should say, imports into Brazil. I believe he's Serbian, if I'm not mistaken. But has played for Real Madrid at one point in his career and ended up in Brazil, and that's a whole other story, but quite a fantastic story around Petkovic. And he's essentially become a carioca at heart, still lives in Brazil after his retirement. And for anybody that wants to get a quick glimpse of who he is, just go on YouTube and search for him and that famous Vasco goal that he scored. Quite a beautiful free kick that ended up winning the state championship for Flamengo back in 2001, if I'm not mistaken.
And Rio, just to finish up on this kind of Ronaldinho avenue of stars or whatever they're going to call it, there is then this outstanding court case which spoken in quite great detail about Flamengo's mismanagement, their financial issues. Some more has come out on that in the past week or so. They've now paid their players for September and October after securing 15 million euros worth of loans from 50 million pounds worth of loans from banks. They were refused an additional loan that they tried to take out. They think they've also secured the release of 20 million reais of TV money that was withheld by Globo due to previous debts that are still unpaid. But it's this case with Ronaldinho that could really impact on Flamengo's future for the next couple of years. If they end up having to pay that 51 million reais, which Ronaldinho obviously thinks he's contractually entitled to, then Flamengo's financial situation, considering they've maxed out their loan capabilities, suddenly looks pretty dire when, all joking aside, they're starting to look into some fairly murky waters at that point.
Well, I think Flamengo's been in murky financial waters for quite a few decades now. So I don't think there's too much new here in terms of taking on loans and working out deals off on the side. It's just a sort of typical operating procedure, really, for Flamengo. But you're right, you know, when you start talking about figures of this size, they start adding up. And I'm not quite sure how much grounds Ronaldinho actually has against Flamengo and whether or not there's any chance that he might win this lawsuit or at least win it to the amounts of money that he's hoping to win. So I can't really speak about the probability of whether or not that will happen. But certainly if it does, you're right, it does put Flamengo in a very tricky financial situation. They do have some money coming in from TV rights and a potential very big contract deal with Adidas, but at the same time, they're constantly spending money that they don't have and spending money that they think they will be having in the future, and that's never a good idea. So certainly, Flamengo fans have as usual a lot to be concerned about.
Well, for the listeners then, Rio, they can come back for our 10th anniversary show and then. We'll probably be debating Ronaldinho having turned up on the doorstep asking for an installment of that payment that was never actually made.
Well, him and, you know, 10 other players in that queue, probably.
Romario still heading the queue, having not played for a good 13 years or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he has he certainly has the most right to be upset. You know, if I were him, I'd be saying, "Hey, how come these other guys keep getting paid ahead of me? Yeah, I have the oldest debt that you have."
it's a fairly common situation with all clubs where we do talk about Flamengo a lot, but we should make it clear that there's a lot of other clubs in the situation, and it's very much a case of debts are there not to be paid. They're there to be re-managed and renegotiated every couple of years when a payment's missed. And any cash that comes in is there to be spent before the creditors come chasing it.
Absolutely. And you know, I think the only sort of positive that Flamengo fans draw from this is that bitter rivals Vasco seem to be in even deeper financial trouble. So at least something for Flamengo fans to be positive about.
Well, I honestly think in the next couple of years there's going to be a big story on one of the club finances. We're just waiting for something major to develop. So it's something to keep an eye on, certainly, if you have an interest in the politics behind the Brazilian game. But it's all, as we said, fairly murky and not too easy to understand from an outside perspective. And Rio, I think that's it for this week. It's been a pleasure once more, Rio. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Always good, Chris.
And thank you to all those out there who are listening. If you've made it to this point, we appreciate it. Send in your suggestions and your comments, and leave us a rating on iTunes. That's always well received. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode.